you, Tim.
This is the original House of Blues. This is the home of Muddy Waters. In fact, among blues musicians in the 50s, it was really considered an achievement. Here was a man who had success with his music, through his records and his performance. He could buy a home with it. And so he did. In 1954, he bought what was a two-family house, originally built in 1889. And it not only was just his home, but he was Mr. Hospitality. And anyone in music or anyone else was always welcome at his house. And it was just constant coming. So almost everyone who was anyone in Chicago blues and music walked through the doors of this house.
54 to 73, he was here?
54 to 73. He bought the house. In fact, one of the people that he had check it to make sure it was okay, because he knew buildings and real estate, was Leonard Chess.
Yeah, right.
So he was the house inspector.
And we're at, just to get it on record, 4339 South Lake Park.
Right. And different people who lived here, Otis Spann lived here in apartments in the building. There's stories of Howlin' Wolf when he was first traveling into Chicago. He was given a place to stay here. There was some...
Mike Bloomfield came here.
Mike Bloomfield did an interview right in the living room there. There's pictures of him visiting the house. But everyone was welcome. Muddy remodeled the house. In fact, what you see here is, you know, it was a proper Victorian 1889 house with kind of a fancy wood porch. And Muddy decided to modernize it. And so he took away the Victorian porch and put on this metal porch. And he took away the decorative 1889 sheet metal and put on these red and white boards on it. Now, normally in preservation, you'd say, oh my gosh, look at how that house has changed. But in this case, it's the changes that are important, because Muddy did it.
Chris Toepfler, who we were talking about, who does the board-ups, he said, I guess originally he had the flamingos on there?
There were storm doors that you could buy at the time that he had the house that would have aluminum flamingos on them, and then you could customize them with your name and address. And so this house originally had them. Those disappeared a long time ago. I'm afraid they just were taken for scrap. And when you see photographs of the house, you see those doors, and I don't know why, but in the photographs when Muddy was here, the doors were put up in reverse, so it said Waters Muddy. And so when Chris Toepfer wanted to recreate the look, he did it very literally, and it says Waters Muddy, which is just the way it was. It might have been the way the doors fit or something that somebody had to improvise.
So 54, what was this neighborhood like?
This was an area in transition, because this part of Chicago in the early 20th century and up into the 1950s, the area along the lakefront was mostly under racial covenants. It was white ownership, and they actually, the residents banded together and put on your deed that the property could never be sold to African Americans. There was a Supreme Court decision that overturned that. And so there was a great increase of African Americans who bought, and white families moving out. So this was an area in transition. The houses were all bought by people who were not, like Muddy, who was the, there were many of Muddy's band who lived here either as tenants or purchased the buildings outright. Willie Big Eyes Smith, who was part of his band at one point, actually lived in this house at one time after.
And they told me, like, some of them lived next door sometimes, and there were some musicians who lived across the street.
Willie Big Eyes Smith actually then moved to another house. But everyone knew, and it was easy for, you know, these impromptu, you know, jam sessions in a way right out in front of the house. So the what people now listen to on old recordings, you could hear live just on a warm summer day at 4339 South Lake Park.
Right where John's at. I mean, again, we've said this once, but you can't say it enough. You say this is the most historically significant house in the city of Chicago. Right?
I believe so, because of the importance of the person and persons who are associated with it, in terms of part of something that really significantly puts Chicago on the world cultural map. It was here, and it wasn't just a house where Muddy lived and just sat behind closed doors and hang his hat. This was like the great blues community that was here. You know, Buddy Guy first comes to town, you know.
This is a portal into the home.
This is the portal. And you'd be welcome. Muddy built this amazing kitchen in the back. I saw it when it was still intact. And it was a kitchen made for entertaining.
Did he have any Popeil gadgets there, Tim?
Not that I saw. They were long gone.
Yeah, my Popeil collection.
Part of my that's what we've got on my tombstone will be, you know, the world's authority on Popeil Ronco TV advertised products.
Now, again, in the crusade to make this something, an educational center or a museum, some people have said this is too far off the beaten path. I have been coming down here, and I have seen European tourists drive by and take pictures. Where we're at, would people come, and if this got restored, would people come and visit it?
Of course they would. Uh-huh. I mean, that any idea of this being somewhere that you shouldn't go, that's just old perceptions that hopefully are being left by the wayside. And it's a neighborhood, and actually it's a beautiful neighborhood. In fact, if you look and see up and down the street, these are houses that are being restored to the way they looked in their days of glory, and the old porch is being put back, the brick beautifully pointed. It's in fact, I would be delighted to live here. In fact, it's the sort of thing you think, gee, I wish I could just buy it myself and live in it. Yeah. And you'd be in a really nice, really nice neighborhood.
We could start a campground, John. There's one camper. Wow. Wow.
That's old Lake Park Liquor. And so that's where Muddy would, you know, go down for a party and get his...
And that was there. Lake Park Liquor was there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And how far are we from the lake?
I mean, really, you're not that far. I mean, you can just see Lakeshore Drive is just... over and just, you know, basically almost the equivalent of a couple of blocks in the lakefront here. We're probably getting some nice lake breeze right now as where we are, right?
Maybe the last thing, and we were talking about this in the van. So he sells it in 73. He goes to Westmont. But he kept interest in the house.
He was very proud of the house, and he kept it in the family. He would rent it out. I used to come here, but you could come here and Muddy's kids would be sitting on the front porch. And if you pulled up, they'd come and visit with you. You could go sit on the porch with them. I sat in that living room many a time and talked with them about, you know, the house and growing up and who was there. And one of them told me the story of, he said as a kid, that he had to share his bed with Chuck Berry. You know, because, you know, the door was always open. You need a place to stay. So, I mean, where else are you going to find a place where you have a story like that?
Yeah.
So it's really important. It's really unique. And also there's layers to the story, and the story of the neighborhood and its transitions and whatnot. You can tell many different stories with just this single building. It's anything but an assemblage of brick and stone and wood. I mean, this is a building that really has heart.
Why did he move to Westmont?
Well, actually, there are stories of Muddy Waters giving interviews in this house where he says, this area is getting a little rough. And it was getting a little rough at the time. And he says that he thought that he needed to get out. And so he did move. He moved to the suburbs. And there was an error. In fact, many of the buildings here were owned by absentee landlords who let them deteriorate. And so the quality of the housing stock deteriorated. And so it had problems. But Muddy himself, that was his decision to leave it. But he never gave up on it. He always kept the house and kept it in his family after he died.
And again, give us a little, just last question, a little synopsis on what is it made of, the type of brick, and it is salvageable?
The building is salvageable. These buildings are tough. And this is made out of good quality face brick, and it's actually in pretty, you can see it needs some pointing, and but it's in terms of it's in any kind of physical danger, no. But the longer it stays vacant, the more problematic it gets. Because whenever you have things like open mortar joints in the winter, water gets in, it freezes, it expands, and it's not good for it. And it's just a heartbreaker to see a building of this importance and this power just kind of just sitting here.
Awful.
And it's different in having sat in that living room myself and gone through the house. This breaks my heart.
And just for on the record, just for people, if they see this, what does the X mean?
X is on the building. Now, many people mistakenly assume that means that it's marked for demolition. There is, by ordinance, if you have a building that is vacant, it is marked with an X, and this informs the fire department, if there happens to be a fire in the building, that there is, presumably, if it's not anybody in the building, that it is vacant.
I'm gonna call into your window, baby. I'm gonna call into your door. You got anything I want, I'm gonna crawl up on your floor, because I'm a crawling thing, Satan. And I lose my dear. I don't wanna catch you fooling around with my main gun. You used to be my friend.